Okay, we'll proceed with the next case, which is Pupella versus Gonzalez. Mr. Zhang.
Yes. Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Yongbing Zhang. I represent petitioner in this case. May I please the court? Ms. Pupella is an Indonesian citizen. She came here with a valid visa in 1999, and she and her husband and their daughter had been properly kept their legal non-immigrant status until sometimes in year 2002, because her husband, or the male petitioner in this case, his employment was terminated by the KPMG. In March 2003, the female petitioner filed the asylum application. Their application was first was not granted by the asylum office, then was referred to the immigration judge in Chicago, and was denied by the judge. Then they filed an appeal with the board, which deny their appeal. There are primarily two issues in this case. Like other two cases, the court has just heard whether in this case the late filing of asylum application can be excused, and the decision by the made by the IJ, supported by the BIA regarding the late filing, can be reviewable by this court. Let me address the first issue. I think in this case, the IJ made several errors in finding that the asylum application was not filed within reasonable time. First, the IJ erroneously shifted the burden of the timing of deportability of petitioners in this case by asking petitioners to provide evidence of showing at what time period their legal status lapsed. But the record is ambiguous, or the evidence in this case is ambiguous as to the timing of their termination or the expiration of the legal status. The only evidence we have is the testimony of the male respondent or the male petitioner stating that he received a notice in April 2002 from KPMG, says your employment is terminated, but you still need the company still need you to do some work. And at the same time, the record contained the evidence from the KPMG showing that up until October or November 2002, male respondent was still paid by the KPMG for the service he provided. Normally, it is the government's burden of proof to show that the alien is deportable, and I believe it is also government's burden of proof to show at what time period, especially in this case, where respondents first maintained the legal status, sometime their status lapsed. Because the timing is very important in this case, as far as the issue of late filing asylum application is concerned. So this is the first mistake the IJ made. The second is, the IJ totally disregard the circumstances the female respondent was filing the asylum around March 2003, especially the physical condition of female respondent, which is a factor of extraordinary circumstance recognized by the statute and the regulations. When the judge made the decision, it totally disregard this. The third is, at one point, the IJ even arbitrarily concluded that even if your legal status lapsed in November or October 2002, your late filing in March 2003, which fell within 6 months period, should not be recognized as reasonable filing or a timely filing. There are agency handbooks, such as asylum office handbooks, recognize that after aliens' legal status lapsed, so long as the asylum application was filed within 6 months, that application should be viewed as timely. But here, in this case, the judge did not give any reason why he would not recognize that filing as timely, even if the deportability of time starts in November. So based on these errors, we request the court to review this issue. We understand the Immigration and Nationality Act expressly stated that regarding the time of filing asylum application, the circuit court does not have jurisdiction. But I think the case law in this circuit and the amended Real ID Act will allow the court to review this issue. In a case we cite in the brief is Spencer Malley. In that case, the court stated where a discretionary ruling has the effect of a substantive ruling on the application, it becomes judicially reviewable. In this case, we do not ask the court to conclude that the finding the timely ruling is a discretionary ruling, but we ask the court to review the IJ's reasoning behind denying the asylum, the reasoning behind finding the asylum filing is not timely, because the IJ's ruling of 1 year filing has the effect of substantively denying the asylum application. If you review the record or the transcript, the most part of the testimony goes to the 1 year filing. And there are mixed discussions. At one time, it's about what happened in the United States regarding their legal status, and then it's about petitioners' travel back to Indonesia. And the IJ just mixed these issues together, and the petitioner really did not have a very good opportunity to pursue their asylum claim. And according to the Real ID Act, it amended the judicial review provision to allow review of constitutional claims and questions of law. But in this case, we have not raised any constitutional law claim. But we believe the IJ's ruling of 1 year bar in this case constitute questions of law and give the circuit court jurisdiction to review. The second issue is about the IJ's denying petitioner's application for withholding of removal, which was affirmed by the BIA. In this case, the BIA cited a case from the Seventh Circuit, Firmans-Jaha. I think this case is factually distinguished from instant case. In that case, the IJ found that petitioners in that case had a firm settlement in the third country. Because of this firm settlement, the asylum application was barred. And regarding withholding of removal, there's a very critical and important fact in that case. That is, in that case, there was no anything happened in Indonesia. And the petitioners in that case did not claim any harm, injuries, harassment happened in Indonesia. But in this case, it's different. There are some bad things happened to the a female petitioner in Indonesia. And I think what happened in Indonesia against the female petitioner constitute the past persecution. Therefore, she's entitled to a presumption of welfare and future persecution. Is my time up or?
The red light's on.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks. Juncker.
Good morning. May it please the court, John Yunchai on behalf of the United States Attorney General. Your Honors, as an initial matter, I think it's quite clear that this court's precedent holds that this court lacks jurisdiction over the Attorney General's determination as to whether or not an asylum application has been timely filed, which normally has to be within 1 year, unless there can be shown change or extraordinary circumstances in the case. And specifically the cases that we cite to is Vasile versus Gonzalez, as well as Sokolov versus Gonzalez, which came after the Vasile case. And to be very clear, the Vasile case addressed the matter in light of the Real ID Act, where under 8 U.S.C. 1252 A.D., Congress promulgated a statute that said that this court has jurisdiction, regardless of what the Immigration Nationality Act says, over constitutional claims and questions of law. The Vasile case then went on further, however, and acknowledged that, or actually held that, the determination of the Attorney General is actually a discretionary one when it comes to the change or these exceptional circumstances that may be presented in a case. And under that umbrella, held that, in fact, it did not fall under the Real ID Act, and this court clearly lacked jurisdiction over it. And to address, which I believe is a new argument being raised today, that the government somehow shifted the burden to Ms. Pupella here to demonstrate that the application was timely filed, it's very clear in the regulation under 8 CFR 208.4 AI that says, for purposes of Section 208A2B of the Act, which describes the timeliness, that addresses the timeliness issue, the applicant has the burden of proving, one, that it's timely filed, if it's not timely filed within 1 year, that those changed or exceptional circumstances apply. And clearly, again, the determination of that is within the Attorney General's discretion and therefore unreviewable by this court. Now, the next issue, of course, I think, well, the primary one outside of that is whether or not the record compels the finding that Ms. Pupella did not establish or did establish a well-founded fear of persecution. And this, of course, is under the higher standard of withholding of removal that requires a more likely than not or clear probability of that showing. And central to the government's decision in this case for the board, as well as the immigration judge, is, of course, the Fermanzaja case that came out, I believe, in 2005. And that case actually isn't very distinguishable from this case, despite what counsel just stated. In that case, it was an Indonesian woman. The way that he's attempting to distinguish it is by stating that the asylum application was not reviewed based on an alternate ground. Well, that really doesn't matter in the case. Whether it wasn't reviewed based on a firm resettlement finding or a timeliness finding doesn't go to the heart of the finding of the court in that case. In fact, they review it under the clear probability standard, her well-founded fear claim of persecution in the future. They come to the conclusion in that case that, citing also, like in this case, that the petitioner in that case did not have family that was harmed in Indonesia. And the reports, although they acknowledged strife in that country, the 1998 riots, which of course are mentioned in this case here, they found that there was no clear probability of future persecution. Ms. Pupella also cites a Ninth Circuit case, the Sale case, and within the Fermanzaja case, this court had held that that case is not persuasive and obviously would not control the finding in Fermanzaja and as well as in this case. And in Sale, they held that by merely showing that you are a member of a disfavored group, which in this case would be Christian, Chinese, Indonesian female, that you thereafter, if you qualify as a member of this group, you thereafter have to show a lower showing of individualized risk as to harm and persecution. Now, this record goes a long way from compelling the conclusion that she made that showing, the showing that she has a clear probability of persecution. As the board and immigration judge cited, her family and her husband's family, a majority, well, I believe the husband's parents as well as a brother, still remain in Indonesia. And I think really significantly, the husband's parents have a home in Singapore as well as in Australia, yet they choose to live in Indonesia. The attempt was made to distinguish the case on the record that it's different for the petitioners here because they have the opportunity to flee if something happens. Well, I think that isn't really a persuasive fact in showing that the record compels that they will not be persecuted in the future if they do return. Moreover, the board rightfully acknowledged, as well as the immigration judge, that there are problems over there. There is general harm and strife. There are terrorist attacks in Indonesia. But the record also shows that the government is trying to do something to stop these terrorist attacks, which incidentally, many of which are very random, have occurred at hotels and in tourist destinations. However, the government there arrested 14 persons for the Marriott bombing, and that's in the record at page 227. They prosecuted at least 80 individuals for the Bali bombings in October of 2002. That's in the record at page 232. The country reports, this is all from the 2003 country reports. The country reports also state at page 244 that there was a sharp drop in the previous year of conflict between Muslims and Christians. But, of course, the 2004 International Religious Freedom Report states that there was a reemergence of clashes in a different region of Indonesia, which does not involve Jakarta. But the government was working with both sides to reduce tensions and hopefully resolve any future problems there. So, again, I think it's clear that the record is a long way from compelling an alternate conclusion in this case. The Firman Zaja case is very persuasive and, in fact, more factually identifiable with this case than distinguishable. And based on those issues and based on the record as a whole, I believe that this court should dismiss the petition for review as it goes to the issue of one-year eligibility of the asylum application and deny the petition as it pertains to the withholding of removal claim because a record does not compel the finding that a clear probability of persecution was shown in this case by the petitioners.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Your time expired, Mr. Zhang. Is there anything you need to add?
No.
Okay, fine. This case will be taken under advisement.